Good afternoon. I call House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and the time is 1:11 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grunberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. Talia, there's like a little whistly reverb that I'm hearing on the microphone. I don't know if anybody else notices that. It sounds different to me today. The following members present is Representative Johnson, Representative Gray, Representative Carpenter, Representative Groh, and myself, Chair Vance. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have one item on today's calendar, and that is to hear House Bill 163, FAFSA Raffle, by Representative Hemschut in its first hearing. Per the bill sponsor's request, there's proposed committee substitute for the committee to use as its working document upon introduction of the bill. Representative Carpenter, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that the committee adopt the proposed CS for HB 163 Judiciary version 33-LS0628/U as the committee's new working document.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute has been adopted. Representative Hemschut, if you would please come forward and walk us through your bill. Please state your name for the record, and as well as Thatcher, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rebecca Hemschut, House District 2, and my staff.
Thatcher Brower, staff to Representative Hemschut.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to present this bill today. Appreciate everybody's time to hear it. I'll just kind of launch into the problem we're trying to solve. This bill is seeking to increase Alaska's participation rate in the FAFSA. The FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. Annually, we're leaving about $6 million in federal money on the table. That's grants alone. This is money that doesn't have to be paid back. And so the issue with that is we're 51st in the nation, so that includes the territory. So we're worse than the other 49 states and territories. So we have a lot of room to improve in this, and this is we're hoping an innovative idea to kind of bring us off of that worst in the nation spot. So the impact of leaving all of that funding on the table, there are multiple problems with that. One is families whose kids are pursuing post-secondary education might be spending more than they need to. Another is maybe families haven't really thought about, and the FAFSA is a key way to think about what is my post-secondary plan. When I finish high school, what happens next? To be clear, the FAFSA is kind of a door opener financially to every kind of program. You can use it in state, out of state. You can use it at vocational training. You can use it in university, an associate's degree, just about everywhere. So the FAFSA also is required for the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the higher ed grant, and families can use the FAFSA sort of as a discussion starter for what is the next thing that their student's going to do, their child's going to do after graduation. So we're hoping that the timing of hearing this bill is actually really good, because there was a federal sort of revision to the FAFSA application. So we're hearing, and Director Eifert is here and she can say a lot more about it, but we're hearing that the time it takes to complete the FAFSA could be as little as 30 minutes. Unlikely that it's actually that efficient, but if you have all your documents, your first go around can be done pretty quickly, as opposed to the previous version, which took a little bit more effort. So we're hoping that between this revision with a little bit of a messy rollout, but ultimately a good result, is that the FAFSA takes less time to fill out, and then with this incentive to Alaska students to get them to participate more, that we would see that number increase, the number of kids actually applying. And the bill basically is an incentive raffle. Everybody who completes the FAFSA for the first time is entered in a monthly drawing for $1,000, and then their name goes back in the pot for the annual drawing of five $10,000 awards. We would have loved to make those scholarships. That would have been fantastic, but it's really difficult to have the relationships with each institution across the nation, since this federal money can be used really anywhere. So we decided that just going with a cash award would be a unique, we hope, and effective way to get students to participate. So Thatcher can talk about the changes in the CS or the sectional analysis if you'd like.
Yes, please, if you could walk us through the new committee substitute.
Great. Again, for the record, Thatcher Brower, staff representing Hemshute. And I'll go ahead and go through the sectional analysis, and then if there are questions about the changes we made, I'm happy to answer those. Version S is a work draft that we presented, and section one of that version amends AS 11.66.280, subsection 3, to define the FAFSA raffle that we're proposing as gambling, just like the permanent fund dividend education raffle, where you can set aside a portion of your permanent fund dividend and be entered in a raffle, is also classified as gambling in that statute. Sections 2 and 3 of the bill amend AS 14.42.030, which requires the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to administer the raffle, and it also allows the commission to adopt the regulations that they need to run the raffle. Section 4 is the main bill, and it sets up the raffle and sets up the fund that the raffle will be paid out from, and that fund will be set up in or will be an account in the general fund and will be managed by the Department of Revenue. It also specifies that only a first-time filer is allowed to enter the FAFSA raffle, both in the months that they qualify or that they, once they complete their FAFSA, then they're eligible for the monthly prize unless they win, and then they're taken out of those monthly prizes. And then everybody's eligible for the $5,000, $10,000 prizes at the end. And the final section 3 of the bill, just establishes effective date as October 1st, 2024. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
And through the chair, I guess I would just add the open date for the FAFSA and more information about it is available through Santa Eford, who's the executive director for ACPE, the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. We also have invited testimony with Principal Sandra Lundvik from Sitka High School, but I don't know if she made it on the line. So it would be great to free her up to go back to her duties if we could prioritize her if she's there.
Yes, she is available. Ms. Lundvik, if you would please state your name for the record and begin with your invited testimony.
Yes, hi. My name is Sandra Lundvik, and I am the principal at Sitka High School. And thank you for allowing me to speak to this today. We are constantly looking at ways to get our students more opportunities for post-secondary training. One of the things we work with students very regularly with is our dual enrollment program. And through that, I can speak to a recent story where we have some low-income students that we're able to register for and are completing their state boards right now to become CNAs. And we walk those students and their families through the FAFSA application and help them complete it. It ended up being pretty time consuming. I know it's more streamlined this year, but it's still a pretty big hurdle to get them and their family through that process. But it also has helped them realize that they don't have to stop there and they can continue on to potentially become an LVN or an RNA, just to be able to continue their post-secondary training because they can now realize that they can afford it. I think anything that we can do to help incentivize or encourage students to prioritize completing that FAFSA, I think will demonstrate to families that they can actually afford some of this post-secondary training.
Thank you, Ms. Lundvik. Do we have any questions from committee members before? Hearing none, thank you so much for taking the time to testify on this bill.
Thank you for having me.
Representative Hemshute, are we next going to have the presentation before us?
Correct, if the committee is willing to hear Santa Eford, she has more information about the FAFSA in general.
Yes, thank you. And then after that, we can take questions from committee members. Ooh. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Vance and members of the committee for letting me come this afternoon and provide this information. My name is Santa Eford. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education and the Executive Officer for the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. And so today, the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education supports increasing completion of FAFSA for Alaska students and individuals. And so I'm here in support of that role. And so as we've, this is not, I'll use the keyboard. That's not working. And so as you've already heard, the FAFSA stands for Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And the FAFSA serves as the first step in the financial aid process. It is the application that students must complete to gain access to the largest funding source in the United States, which is through the Federal Student Aid Department of Education. Overseen by the U.S. Department of Education, federal student aid provides more than $150 billion in student financial aid annually. Completing the FAFSA determines the student financial need in completion to their cost of attendance in the program that they're going to pursue. Submitting a FAFSA increases the student's funding options and their opportunities to attend a school or a trade or career program to help reach their career goals. So the FAFSA, we want to make sure is understood, it's not just an application for federal loans. The FAFSA is the opportunity that students can gain access to federal Pell Grants, Supplemental Education Opportunity Grants, a TEACH grant, or a work-study opportunity at the institution that they attend. It's also really the gateway for other non-federal aid programs. And so our state aid programs, the Alaska Education Grant, which is a need-based program, and the Alaska Performance Scholarship, both require a FAFSA completion to be eligible to receive those state funds. The FAFSA is also the form in the application for other institutional or campus-based aid, or possibly other private and public scholarships that also require the FAFSA. And as you heard at the beginning from Representative Hemshute, Alaska has ranked last or close to last in national FAFSA completion rates for more than a decade. So what gets left behind if a student does not complete their FAFSA? So let's think about this in dollars and cents for each of our students. So by not completing the FAFSA, Alaska students could lose access to the Alaska Performance Scholarship, which at this time provides up to $4,755 a year. It's a performance scholarship opportunity. Also, they could lose Alaska Education Grant, which is up to $4,000 a year. That's a need-based state grant. And they could lose opportunity for up to almost $7,400 a year for the federal Pell Grant. Excuse me. That's the maximum amount. And so if you add up those numbers, a student could be looking at losing the opportunity for over $16,000 annually of basically free money by not completing the FAFSA. These are opportunities that they do not pay back. So each year, as again you've already heard, Alaska's high school graduating classes leave $6 to $7 million in federal Pell Grants behind by not completing the FAFSA. So what are the impacts from that? So Alaska FAFSA completion support and implementation is critical for students. Again, the classes of 2022 and 2023 left over $12 million in federal funds. Nationally, the National College Attainment Network, or NCAN, data shows that 92% of seniors who complete their FAFSA enroll in some post-secondary program following their graduation by November. However, if they do not complete the FAFSA, the data shows that only 51% will enroll in a post-secondary program. And without the FAFSA, Alaska students do not have access to many state and other institutional scholarships and grants. And so I'll pause just quickly. One other piece of data information: in any national surveys or surveys that we have done with Alaska students, the number one reason they do not pursue any post-secondary programs or training are finances. They can't afford it. And so this opens the door to help them see. And that's why it's such a high enrollment rate after someone completes a FAFSA, because as the principal on the phone just shared, it opens that door for them to say, hey, I've got money. I have some support to do this. So next, without access to funding sources, usually what happens is Alaska students go one of two pathways. So either they end up borrowing larger amounts of money in education loans, and generally that's coming from higher interest rate loans from private for-profit lenders, or, as we just shared, they do not pursue any kind of post-secondary education and career training. Alaskans must have post-secondary education credentials to meet our upcoming workforce needs. And I know you have been having many conversations about that in lots of committees throughout the last few years. So Alaska has one of the highest percentages of citizens that have some college, but they have not completed a degree or a credential. But we all know that by 2025, 65% or more of Alaska's workforce that are going to require some kind of post-secondary credential to fill those job needs. So you've heard and all know that there was a new Better FAFSA, or a FAFSA simplification, that was rolled out in December. So what's new with that, and what are the improvements in that program or the new form? So there's enhanced convenience. So students and contributors complete the FAFSA by answering approximately 36 questions on the new form as compared to over 100 in the prior form that was required. Now there's also an automatic exchange called the Direct Data Exchange that transfers tax information, which has already been submitted to the IRS, into the FAFSA application. So that is an automatic interface and transfer now. The provisional independent student status is new, and this new status helps students that are experiencing specific other or unusual circumstances. It gives them the opportunity to acquire this provisional independent student status so that they can complete their FAFSA without having a parent or a guardian or someone else have to be a contributor for them. And the FSA, or Federal Student Aid, has identified nearly 300,000 homeless or unaccompanied youth, which will now be able to complete their FAFSA with this new provisional status. And students have an opportunity now to collect up to, enter up to 20 institutions that could receive their financial FAFSA information. Some additional improvements are, again, the reduced number of questions, but the time has also been reduced to complete the FAFSA. Now we're hearing from our families and students that we're working with that it's taking around 30 minutes, where it used to take an hour or even much more if you did not have information accessible. The Student Aid Index, which is called the SAI, has now replaced what was called the Estimated Family Contribution, and that EFC was an actual dollar amount, where now the Student Aid Index It's more of an eligibility index that institutions can use based on their cost and putting together what a financial package would look like or support that student. Also, it provides increased access to a federal Pell Grant. So as I shared, an increase in helping students that are basically independent students, this also, the federal government has shown that they now have identified with this new student aid index that approximately 610,000 new low-income students will receive a federal Pell Grant, and approximately 1.5 more students should be receiving and available, eligible now for the maximum Pell Grant. So we've heard, or many of you have heard, and the principal, that was just on from Sitka, shared a little bit about what we hear from families. Why are they not doing this? And so just wanted to provide some of the myth-busting, some of the quotes and the statements that we hear, and just wanted to share what's going on and why they might feel that way. So it takes too long and it's too complicated. You heard the principal say, many of the students and their families are saying, we don't want to do that. It's too much effort. It's too long. But again, as I just shared, the average FAFSA completion time for new applicants now with the new form is around 30 minutes. And if you're renewing with a new form to come in the next years, it should be even much shorter. So the next myth, the government already has my information. I shouldn't have to send it again. Well, they heard that, they agreed, and so now there is the direct data exchange, what actually does that automatic interface with your income IRS tax information. The next myth, my family makes too much money, so there's no point in filling it out. Many states, though, and institutions require the FAFSA for grants and scholarships that are not just need-based. As I shared, the FAFSA is an application for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And a lot of times families say, well, why? Well, what we want to ensure is that we're helping that student put together the absolute best financial package that leaves them with either no loans or a very small dollar amount in loans so that they are not hampered with a large bill at the end of their completion. And so it's not just for need-based scholarships. It's also for other opportunities so that students and families can put together the very best package to go to their post-secondary programs. What's another myth? I haven't filed my taxes yet, so I don't have the tax information. Well, actually, the FAFSA utilizes what's called prior year. So it's really 2 years of tax information prior to when you're filling out your FAFSA for this year. So if students are filling out for 2024, it's actually pulling your 2022 tax information. The next myth, I'm not taking out loans, so I don't need to do it. As we've said a number of times, FAFSA is not only for loans. It's grants, work study, state and institutional aid. And so students lose out on all those types of funding sources. The next myth, it makes me take more money than I want or need. Again, a student is not required to take any part of the federal student aid package that's offered. So if a student files their FAFSA and it comes back and it really they're only approved for possible federal loans, they can say, no, I don't want any of those. Or they could take a lesser amount. Or they could take, yes, I want to have an opportunity for a work study, but I don't want any loans. So it is personally up to the student and their family what they want to accept out of the package, and they can always say no. And so what has ACPE been doing to respond to FAFSA completion needs? So we had started, actually, back in October, we put together the first Alaska FAFSA Summit, and we invited all kinds of partners and stakeholders across the state to put together a really consortium of others that can help focus and provide information and resources to spread this across Alaska and help others. And we were very excited that we had participation from, we really filled up registration. We only had room for 125. We filled it up. We had K-12 participate. We had the university and other institutions. We had our tribal partners and their education foundations participate. And so it was a great gathering of all kind of partners across the state to start and really kick off this new FAFSA and emphasis that we're working on. ACPE provides a class. It's called Master the FAFSA Training, and it's given every Monday and Thursday from 2 to 3:30. And this is a class or a session for anyone that's interested in being a resource in their school, being a resource in their community, or just as if they want to know more about it and they can help support family members or others. But we're really trying to put forward this training to help spread knowledge and information so we can have more individuals trained on FAFSA in school districts and in our communities to help. We also have,
We have a question from Representative Carpenter.
Before
you continue, I would like to note for the record, we were joined by Representative Allard at 1:23 p.m. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, I just have a quick question regarding this training, and it looks like the training is probably complemented by the website, one-on-one FAFSA appointments. And the question that comes to my mind, since this is the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, if I look in the statute, is the ACPE organization statutorily required to conduct this training, create this website, and offer appointments to sell, if you will, the FAFSA?
Through the Chair, Representative Carpenter, it doesn't specifically say in the statutes FAFSA, but it does say in the ACPE statutes that we would provide education and outreach to Alaskans to help them enroll and achieve success in post-secondary programs. And so through this and through our commission, which again has set forward our strategies, our strategic plan, and the goals that would help meet that statutory requirement there for us, the FAFSA is determined to be one of those areas.
Bob?
Thank you. I'm a beneficiary of ACPE, but I work my butt off to fill out the paperwork and take care of myself. And the previous slide that was talking about difficulties in filling out the FAFSA seems to me a great, great predictor of success in an educational institution. If you can't figure out how to fill out a 30-minute form to get free money, I question whether you're going to be successful in a 4-year institution or even a 2-year institution. Seems like that would be what we would want, to not waste our money, is to make sure that people are really dedicated and able to pursue educational institution, the structure, and are actually dedicated to getting school done. So I don't know. There's something that doesn't sit well here with me at this point. But I'm keeping an open mind. I'd like to finish the presentation and understand the bill.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. So not everybody in Alaska is eligible for this bill. Is that correct?
Through the chair, every...
For this scholarship. I wouldn't call it a scholarship raffle.
Do you have questions about the presentation?
Yep. So in regards to this, you're giving us this brief describing a FAFSA. I'm a mother who has filled out a FAFSA form. I will never, ever fill one out again. So my question to you is, in regards to coming in here and presenting that, not everybody in Alaska would be eligible for the raffle.
Through the chair to Vice Chair Allard, my understanding, and like I said, I'm trying to give information on the FAFSA, why it's important, and what it does to help Alaskans. I'm not speaking specifically to the bill. Okay. However, I believe the bill, it would be open to anyone that completes their FAFSA for the first time, would be eligible and open for the raffle. But I think that might be a question for the bill's sponsor.
Okay. So you're just explaining to everybody about FAFSA completely. And you're saying that, and I heard to do a follow-up with Representative Carpenter, you can't do a 30-minute application, then what do you have as a maybe perhaps a proven success to be able to go on to post-secondary education? It's not the length of time for me that to fill out a FAFSA. It's all the questions of the privacy and everything they ask. It's very dig deep. So to say that, oh, the parents don't, I saw your list of questions. I didn't see in there anything about parents absolutely don't want to fill it out because of the in-depth questions they ask. And if I'm not mistaken, a child can say on the application, did your parents refuse to fill it out? Is that correct? I say child, a person going on to college that is probably been claimed on the parents' taxes.
Through the chair to Vice Chair Allard, as I was saying, there's a new provisional status for students that are actually truly independent based on their federal qualifications that have to be met. But I'm trying to understand your question. Were you saying, I'm sorry, maybe repeat.
Let me be a little clearer. I apologize. And through the chair.
Vice Chair Allard.
If a 17-year-old lives at home with her mom and dad, or they are whatever, their mom, whoever, if they don't have the information that the parents will provide on the FAFSA, what happens?
Through the chair to Vice Chair Allard, they have to be, it's a two-part. If they are a dependent student living in the home supported by their parents, it's a two-part. So the student has to fill out their part of the application, and then the parent has to fill it out. And if the parent doesn't, then it would not be completed and finalized.
Okay, so we're going to go back to my question. So then not every potential student, is eligible for the FAFSA. It will discriminate. If a child or a student potential doesn't have their parents fill out the FAFSA form, nothing, they can get nothing from the FAFSA. So not every child is going to, just like the performance scholarships, right? In order to receive Alaska Performance Scholarship dollars, they have to fill out a FAFSA form, correct?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Allard, they do as part of the eligibility. There are many other eligibility criteria that has to be met also.
Okay, so not all students will be, or all Alaskans will be entitled to participate in this. Okay, thank you.
Would you please continue with your presentation?
I think I'm just about finished here. Let's see. As you can see that, yes, we have resources to help families and students complete their FAFSA, and also for teachers in the classroom and counselors, as we know that school districts may not have some of the resources. So we also provide a website that we're trying to keep up to date with all of the FAFSA information, and we do one-on-one FAFSA appointments with individual students and also give FAFSA presentations and training in classrooms. We also provide Funding Your Future presentations, which helps students understand what their options are for financial aid and helps them apply and put together, again, like we said, the best financial package so that they can attend their programs and complete them. We also give presentations and events virtually and in person when we can. We've been at FAFSA completion days. I was here in Juneau with one that they just recently held. We have staff that attend other career and college days. And so we're trying to, again, spread the information so that all students can understand and make that choice of whether this is something that would be helpful for them with their financial package. And we have an online resource library that can be reached through our website. So again, there are the links to those resources and information to help with our FAFSA completion. And yes, there are one-on-one appointment scheduler, other download loadable resources, and my contact information, and also Kate Hillenbrand, who is the director really over staff that work specifically in the schools and with this program. And I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you for your presentation. Would you be able to get the committee the list of the 36 questions now that, I mean, I think it's pretty impressive that it went from 100 questions down to 36. And just because there's interest in what the questions are, is that something that you'd be able to provide to us?
Chair Vance, I'm sorry. Yes, I believe that we could have access and get that back to the committee.
Thank you. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Ms. Eford, it sounds like you guys have done a lot to try to help people do the FAFSA. Why do you think Alaska's number 51?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, I think it's what we were trying to say with those myth-busting things. A lot of things, those reasons, come into play when people think about filling this out. I think there's also, in Alaska, we have many first-generation students that don't have families or a history of attending post-secondary classes. And so I think we're working toward helping to break down that barrier and help others understand that this is a way, and it's not just for a four-year bachelor's degree. It's for helping Alaskans really get a career, some type of certification that they can go to work and help support themselves and their families. So there are all kind of reasons that we hear.
Follow up
through the chair to Ms. Eford. Do we have data to show that the states that are like 1 through 10, they just have kids that all their parents went to college? And so therefore those, it's nothing that the state's doing to encourage people to do FAFSA, it's just that they automatically do it. And do we have it to show that Alaska really is predisposed to be the worst in the country because of our what the Alaskan population is?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, we do have some information. Generally, number one and two in FAFSA completions are kind of back and forth, neck and neck, the state of Louisiana and the state of Tennessee recently, because they have invested a lot of resources in helping their students and families. They also, both of those states, Louisiana being the first, actually put a requirement for graduation with lots and lots of exemptions. There are many exemptions to actually completing a FAFSA for graduation, but they have strongly encouraged, and they've seen quite a jump. And like I said, they went from, I can't remember exactly, but they were more middle of the pack state to the top, and really have seen an increase in their enrollments.
Follow up. Through the chair to Ms. Eford, that's actually a great surprise to me. I wouldn't think that Louisiana and Tennessee would have parents who'd all gone to college or post-secondary school. And so it seems to me like maybe we should be looking at what exactly those states are doing to increase their FAFSA completion rate, since I would say, just off the top of my head, I think they might actually not be drastically different than Alaska's population.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, we actually had a participant in the FAFSA summit that I was sharing that we had in October. We had someone from the state of Louisiana come and speak with us because we too wanted to know, what are you doing? How is this working? What are you seeing? And actually, her presentation is on our website if you're ever interested to see really how they got there and increased this. But it took quite a few years, but they are putting lots of resources into helping educate their population.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Eford, in order for the ACPE to implement some of the things that are happening in Louisiana and Tennessee, do you need the legislature to pass bills, or can you as an organization implement some of the good policies that Louisiana and Tennessee are doing?
Through the chair, Representative Gray, of course, at some point, if the legislature wanted to make a decision, that would be a bill requirement or something. That is certainly up to the legislature, and ACPE is there to provide information, to support or educate, but we are taking knowledge and information that we're learning from other states that are in those top positions and trying to, this is part of why I'm here, it's an education outreach to help Alaskans understand why this is important and what it opens the door to for them.
We have Representative Carpenter, Grow, and then Allard. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, through the chair. You've made a statement earlier that I wanted to explore and try to understand the demand for this. You'd said something to the effect that by 2025, post-secondary credentials would be required. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that so I can understand what you mean.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, what that information actually comes from Alaska CAN, the organization, and I'm sorry, I'll forget exactly what CAN stands for, but it too is an organization that is looking at trying to help educate and provide Alaskans with the training that's going to be necessary to fill our jobs. And so working with our workforce and employers in the state, what we hear from them is there are certain credentials that are going to have to be met in order to fill some of these jobs that right now, unfortunately, Alaska is lacking in some of the credentials needed to actually be hired. And so there's a twofold training that needs to happen, and then the completion of that training so that they can actually be hired into through the businesses and employers here in the state. And that's data and information that has come from the Department of Labor in their workforce work. So that number, I believe, actually comes from the Department of Labor looking at what are Alaskans going to need in 2025 to actually have the credentials to be hired on into the businesses so that Alaska's economy can be vibrant and meeting the needs that we have for the jobs that are going to be here.
Follow up. Thank you. I appreciate the elaboration on that, and I will look up Alaska CAN so I can understand what they're about. Do you know if ACPE receives federal funds specifically for the promotion of filling out the FAFSA? Do all states receive that, or do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, no, ACPE does not receive any federal funds. Our funding is all from the Alaska Student Loan Corporation receipts, or we have higher education investment funds that are used for the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Grant. We do not receive federal funds.
One last follow up. I was the recipient of a ACPE student loan back in the day. Actually, a couple of them that I paid off. Does the ACPE still offer and give out loans through the state, or is that a federal program now?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes, we still have. Like I said, I'm the executive officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. We do still have state loan programs. We have the student education loan, and we have a family education loan that is supported by the state through the student loan fund.
Follow up.
Is there a requirement to fill out the FAFSA in order to be eligible or receive an ACPE loan?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, yes, I believe there is. And again, the reason is because if a student could get $7,400 free in a Pell Grant, that $7,400 less they would have to take out in a loan that they're going to have to pay back. And so the purpose of filling out the FAFSA is, again, maximizing and leveraging the free federal dollars that they could have access to, or other scholarships or dollars, so that if they have to take out a loan, that it's the very smallest amount, and we are not saddling families or students with large loans when they could have had an opportunity to have a grant.
Representative Grove.
To quote the rules, Chairman, thank you, Madam Chair. I think I have more of a comment than a question, which I think may help us here in our deliberations. What I'm struck by during this hearing today is the number of people around the table whose lives have been improved and have gotten way better options in life through education. Representative Gray, who was singing for his supper all around the world, got to become a physician's assistant and take care of patients throughout Alaska. Representative Carpenter became an officer and expanded his military career and fought for our country in two wars, leading soldiers. Through expanded education. I myself, formerly working as a journalist and as a staff member for this legislature, got to become a lawyer through extremely generous, it's almost embarrassingly generous, student loan program that was available, that the state of Alaska made available, where the state of Alaska both paid the difference between resident and non-resident tuition for me to go to law school out of state, because of course then and now no law schools, full-time three-year law schools. Plus, I got a student loan program at a 5% interest rate when I think their interest rate was about 14%. And then there was forgiveness if you stayed in the state after 5 years. So it's embarrassing. And sometimes when I tell these stories, I back up because they will try to get out of the swing zones of people. So the young people in particular get so angry they might hit me. But what I'm saying is that education creates options for people. And I applaud Representative Himshut and her staff and the executive director of ACPE for their efforts to make education more available for Alaskans. Because education, I keep saying, is about options and about your ability to do different things with your life that you choose. And so I think this is really great legislation. I'm proud to co-sponsor it. And I do think it's helpful for the community to understand better, the landscape of where we are and why it's important. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Allard. And then after this question, we can get back to the content of the bill and the issue of to better understand the raffle. So
thank you,
Representative Allard.
Thank you, and through the chair. So I have a couple of questions. I'm going to go back to the first one. You're mentioned all through this bill. ACP is. And so when I ask you questions in reference to the bill, it was a surprise to me you wouldn't know that answer.
Brief at ease.
So when I asked if all Alaskans that were going on to secondary education, if they would be able to use this. You said you didn't know.
Through the chair to Vice Chair Allard, I said, I believe, unless I misspoke, everyone that completes the FAFSA knew for the first time would be eligible. And so anyone that completes and anyone in Alaska can complete, but they have a personal choice whether they do or not. So that would mean not necessarily everyone, but everyone can fill out the FAFSA and be part of the raffle, is my understanding.
So the state-funded gambling here says that unless they fill out a FAFSA, they're not eligible for it. That's the bottom line. So they would be forced to have to fill out a FAFSA to be eligible to gain funds for their post-secondary education, where other students, potential students, would be eligible, but they wouldn't unless they fill out FAFSA. Then my lead-up question, then my question to you is for clarification. Now, going on, my question to ACPE, if we can't even get past being ranked 50th, how do I have any faith in the ACPE that you can remotely enforce or help or take this on? Because you're mentioned, the commission is mentioned as basically the enforcers of this. So can you explain how we're ranked 50 and then I'm supposed to put my faith in the ACPE to be able to accomplish these taskings?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Allard, our role in this is to each month select the winner from the new recently submitted FAFSA. The reason ACPE is named is because we are the designated state higher education organization in Alaska that interfaces with the federal FAFSA system into our Alaska student aid portal. So we get, when an Alaskan fills out a FAFSA and it's completed and submitted, it comes interface into the Alaska, the student aid portal, through what's called an ICER, if you've heard that term, and it's a independent student record. I won't have the whole name of it. And so we have the data. That's the reason that we are mentioned to administer this. But I want to be clear, as I believe when I started, I am sitting in support of increasing FAFSA completion, which is part of our strategic plan through my commission and our goals, not supporting necessarily this bill. I have not had an opportunity to present this bill. My commission votes, and I speak for what the commission decisions are. But I am saying my commission has supported the goal and priority of increasing FAFSA completion, and this bill would be one way to do that.
Okay. May I just do one last comment?
Follow up.
Thank you. I would recommend that you probably read this and brought this to your commission prior, because the things that you're going to have to enforce and delegate and do and abide by and establish task force and be so involved, I'm surprised that you didn't know that, or that the commission doesn't know all of what's going on in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Eford, for your presentation, for answering questions. I would like us to move to better understanding the purpose of this bill, which is to establish the FAFSA raffle fund. So, Representative Hemshute, would you just talk at about how the raffle will work and what the impact of that could be.
Sure. Thank you. Through the chair, the raffle works by the students and families completing the FAFSA.
My apologies.
I'm sorry.
If you would put your name on the record.
Sorry. Representative Rebecca Hemshute, House District 2. And, yeah, in answer to your question, Chair Vance, The raffle is a monthly prize during the open period of the FAFSA, which is technically probably 12 months. This year was a little different. And then the five $10,000 prizes at the end of the open period, which I'm not exactly sure when that is. But there is a point at which they transition to the next year. So all the names would be entered back in for that last one.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Gray?
Thank you. Through the chair to the sponsor of the bill, it's my understanding that the way raffles work best is if people, they're advertised in such a way that they have a fear of missing out. So is there any thought about how we would advertise this, how folks would know that they could win money if they filled out the FAFSA?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Gray, Rebecca Hemshute, House District 2. My understanding is through regulations created from the statute, the Commission on Postsecondary Education would include that in their outreach.
Follow up?
So it's my understanding that we've had lottery and raffles since prior to 1776. In fact, in colonial times, we had 392 raffles held prior to becoming a country. I imagine that the value of the lottery is folks imagining what they would do with the money. I think that's, my mother plays the lottery. I don't, but you know, I think that she's always thinking about what she would do with her millions of dollars that she would win. Could you speak a little bit about the value of students maybe imagining what they would do with the money, but how that might also be about imagining what they would do with the federal aid they might get?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Gray, that's kind of the point of the bill is the prizes are, we hope, an incentive, but more than anything, we want people to be thinking about, well, what is that next step? And so the FAFSA is one of the ways to open the door to your post-secondary plan. So we're hoping that this will, there is a line in the bill, page 5, line 14, thank you, Thatcher, talks about advertising. And so as people become aware, know that this is out there, especially with this transition to the new, they're calling it Better FAFSA, the Faster FAFSA, that it would incentivize kids to not only fill out the FAFSA, but then also to be thinking, well, what is my next step? Which could be military. It could be there are lots of different directions kids can go, but sometimes just taking that next step is something that hasn't really been thought about in a family, especially for folks who maybe haven't completed college or gone to the military.
Follow up?
Thank you. Last question. Just I... Representative Groh talked about all of us doing a FAFSA and going to later education. I just want to say for the record that I hated filling out my FAFSA. It was one of the worst experiences of my entire life. I mean, I really, 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 it was torture. You know, I went to grad school later in life, so I mean, my parents weren't helping me. I had to do it myself. I did it because I had to, but I hated it every single second. And so I feel like with younger people who maybe don't understand the value, asking them to do something that's really unpleasant is easy to not do. I don't know if you can speak to that at all.
Sure. Through the chair, I guess I'm thinking of it as an ROI situation for the, you know, in theory, half hour, I'm guessing more likely hour or two of invested time. The return on that, as you saw, could be substantial. It was $7,000 annually from federal money that doesn't have to be paid back, that doesn't have to come out of your family's pocket, or if you were emancipated out of your own pocket. So I think explaining that ROI is helpful, but then ultimately, you know, if it takes the opportunity of a $10,000 prize to help you kind of take that step into something that's laborious that you don't really want to do, all to the good.
Representative Hemshute, can we discuss the money in the fund on page 4, line 23, the fund consists of money appropriated to the fund by the legislature. And then on page 5, line 6 and 9, it talks about the monthly prizes come from the fund. Have there been discussions about where the startup money will come from?
Madam Chair, no. The idea was the annual prize amount is $62,000, and ACPE feels they have the staff, so we don't. There was a fiscal note to add a staff person when we thought it would be at Department of Education. With the switch over to ACPE, which I think makes a lot more sense, we wouldn't need to add the staff person, so it's really just the annual prize funding. That said, there's really only one source for that, general fund.
Thank you for that clarification, because with the higher education fund, all of the different funds, I wanted to see, you know, just inquire about the conversations of, you know, what this was shaping out to be and being clear. And I'm glad you clarified the fiscal note, because I was, anytime we, you know, we get asked to add an additional staffer, which, you know, is very needed at times, but for something that we're hoping will be a simple process, that's a relief. So we will ask for an updated fiscal note on the bill. Representative Johnson, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering how many other states have this type of incentive, a cash incentive to fill out a form.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, Rep. Hemshoot, District 2. We haven't found another state that's tried this. So they do have the graduation requirement in a few states. That has complications, and without a lot of resource behind it, you put in a graduation requirement, and then if kids don't meet it, they're not allowed to walk at graduation and that kind of thing. So we thought we would try something else in conjunction, ultimately, with this new, easier, we hope, FAFSA. So we're trying to do a carrot instead of a stick in this situation, if you will.
Vice Chair Allen.
Thank you. And through the chair. So Representative Hemshoot, it looks like there's a new fiscal note from April the 5th, 2024. Is that the one that was zeroed out from the 132 one, or is that just, is that something different? I remember Representative Vance had just mentioned that we were going to, originally, according to the bill sitting in front of us, we were going to spend $62,000 for a giveaway, but we were going to add an individual to process it, an accountant, and it would have cost $132,000. But from what you had just said, that this part of the bill is going to be cut out somewhere, somehow, amended?
Through the chair, thank you, Rep. Allard. This fiscal note was when we had the bill originally with the Department of Education, and then we realized that the data actually rests with ACPE, so the Department of Education really isn't the right location for it, so that's where the CS came from. So you are correct. We would not need this position.
May I
follow up?
Thank you. So I just have a couple of questions. So, and I just want clarification for the record. I'm going to go back to the question I asked earlier. So unless the child and the parent both fill out the FAFSA, if they don't fill it out, they will not be eligible for this raffle. Is that correct?
Correct. If they make the choice to fill out the FAFSA, they're entered in the raffle.
So other kids whose parents are willing to fill out the FAFSA, those children will be in the raffle.
They can choose to. They don't have to.
Okay. So
sorry, through the chair.
That's okay.
Follow up?
Yes. Thank you. So what is the buy-in? So like for the PFD, I think there's a $100 buy-in. What is the buy-in for the FAFSA? Do we have a buy-in?
Through the chair, the buy-in is the time that you take as a family to commit to completing the FAFSA.
Okay. I know a lot of foster kids who want to go on to post-secondary education. They don't have parents that are going to probably fill out this form. So that's very concerning to me. And I'm trying to figure out why wouldn't we just do this as a grant. But the other question is, what's the potential number of students in Alaska that you believe would fill this out that are available for this currently?
Thank you. Through the chair, Rep. Hemshoot, House District 2, Vice Chair Allard. There historically have been about 10,000 high school graduates in Alaska. That number has been down in recent years. And, of course, not all would apply. And then there could also be some first-time applicants who are older, in their 30s, 40s, 70s. So I don't think we would ever get beyond 10,000 applicants, and I think it'd be a miracle if we got that high. But we would welcome that.
I have a real problem with part of our population being discriminated against if their parents choose not to fill out this FAFSA form. And plus, I don't encourage gambling in order to get scholarship money by forcing their hand to fill out a FAFSA form of all the parents' private information. I do appreciate you bringing this forward, though. Thanks.
Thank you. Through the chair, we were just looking for an incentive. We're trying to solve the problem.
Representative Carpenter and then Representative Gray.
Thank you. The bill before us on Section 4, page 4, establishes the raffle fund. And that fund is technically an account in the general fund. So I don't think it's actually a separate fund. It's just an accounting of money within the general fund. The language says on line 23 shall be appropriated to the fund. And it's specifically talking about the interest earned from the money in that account. So usually when we draft language that says shall be appropriated and we're talking about from money that's sitting in the account somewhere, this sends up some sort of a flag with our legislative legal department regarding the dedication of funds issue. Was there any discussion with drafters on, I'm just curious why they chose to put a shall be appropriated instead of a may be appropriated, because there isn't any way to force the legislature to appropriate that interest earned. And that seems to run afoul of our dedication of funds prohibition in the Constitution. So I'm just curious why it was drafted that way.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Carpenter, Rep. Hemshoot, House District 2. On page 5, line 15, it says nothing in this section creates a dedicated fund. And so the language used on page 4 that you're referencing, there's also, I'm not sure where it is in here, but it also says that prizes would be prorated according to what's available in the fund. So I think this is just a way, this is speculation right now, but I think it's just a way to make sure if there's some interest earned on the amount in the fund, that it returns back to the same source.
Follow up?
Thank you. I don't know, I have a question on that. I think that the shall be instead of a maybe is, there's a reason why we try to put something in language that says shall be appropriated and then add in other language that says that this isn't a dedicated fund. So you're trying to put in statute a requirement to pay money, but also a recognition that you can't require the payment. So it's circular, and it would be better to communicate to the people and to expectation of future legislators that this is a maybe appropriated to the fund, because that's, unless we have a constitutional amendment to go with it to say that this is a viable dedication of funds, then it would be better to say may.
Representative Hemshoot, would it be your intent that the legislature have an active engagement in the conversation about this funding, this appropriation, this allocation every year?
Through the chair, I'm not invested in the answer to that. So it's fine with me if it's discussed every year. You know, ideally, wouldn't it be great if there was an endowment and it lived on forever and nobody had to touch it again? I don't see this fund working that way, so I think subject to appropriation is probably unavoidable.
Follow up?
The other piece of this, too, that we have to keep in mind is that because this is an account in the general fund, it is also subject to the constitutional provision of money left over at the end of the year moving to the CBR as long as we owe the CBR for the money that we've taken a loan from. So those are two, in my mind, giant hurdles to being able to execute the monetary piece of this on a consistent basis.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I Did I hear you say that the prizes would be prorated based upon the amount in the fund?
I thought I heard you say that. Yes, thank you, Rep. Johnson. I remember reading that in the bill, and I can't point to it right now, but it is what I recall. If I could just
page
have a
five,
moment.
Line 11.
Thank you. Page 5, line 11. If the amount appropriated to the fund in a fiscal year is insufficient to pay the amount of the prizes authorized, the commission shall reduce pro rata the prizes. Thank you, Chair Vance.
Follow up.
It seems to me, and a question or a statement, or someone can address it, Madam Chair, it seems to me that if we are signing into law basically what I consider a contract, if you fill out this form, you'll be eligible for this amount of money, and we don't have that money, we've reneged on the contract. And so that causes me a certain pause. If we say it's going to be 10,000, it's only 8, sorry, or 5, or maybe nothing, then we have passed legislation that we don't know if we can live up to. And so I look at this as a contract with an individual who's taken the time between 10 minutes and an hour, 2 hours, depending on which slide you're looking at, to be eligible for this. And that's like going to a casino where you have no chance of winning. You drop your quarter in, and up there on the front it says, yeah, we may or may not pay you. Even if you win, we may not pay you. So I have some difficulty with that aspect of the obligation of the state being somewhat prorated. Wouldn't it be nice if we could do that with all of our expenses?
My thought, Representative Johnson, is how does this compare to the education raffle that we have with the PFD? But I think we can look into that. I believe we had Vice Chair Allard and then Representative Gray and Representative Carpenter again. Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. I, too, to follow up with what Representative Carpenter had said through the chair, I do, too, have concerns about line 23 through 25. It appears that based on the wordage, and it's on page 4, that the state is paying for a gambling program. So I'm going to have to look into that with legal. That concerns me greatly. And I'm going to say it again for the record. It concerns me greatly that we would be discriminating against kids whose parents just, for whatever reason, aren't going to be filling out the FAFSA, and it eliminates them for being involved in the raffle. You say it's their choice, but it's not a 17-year-old's choice for their parents to fill out the form or not. And I believe that the funds can be used in a better way. I am pleased to hear that there isn't going to be an accountant that would be hired for $132,000 to spend $62,000. And I'm not keen on the state paying for funding a gambling program. Thank you.
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair, perhaps to Ms. Eford, but I'm just going to make a statement first. I'm very appreciative to Representative Hemshute for presenting this bill. There were many folks involved in the crafting of this bill, and the goal was to see, well, hey, we're the worst in the country. What can we do to get more people to fill out the FAFSA? So that leads to my question. What Tennessee, it sounds like what I heard that Tennessee and Louisiana did is that in order to graduate from high school, you have to fill out the FAFSA. That's how I heard it. And I'm curious, do we have to pass a law to do that? Or could an Alaska school district, could their school board decide that that's what that school district was going to do?
For the record, Santa Eford, Executive Director of the Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and through the chair to Representative Gray, I believe our graduation requirements are in statute. I think there's some regulation that would have to be done, so I would have to follow up on that. Louisiana's did put theirs in statute because of the way their graduation requirements were set. I think Tennessee's were in regulation, again, because of how theirs were, their statutes were constructed. And so I might I might refer to Representative Hemshute since she's been in the classroom.
Sure. Through the chair, I can add a little bit to that. And I don't have a completely 100% for sure answer for you, Rep. Gray. But what I can say is there can be local graduation requirements such as swimming lessons. So you might have to be able to swim to graduate. I think Sitka had a graduation requirement like that I think was locally set. I don't know on something like this if that would work. And through the chair, I'll just add a downside of graduation requirements is, you know, if you're taking the ASVAB, why should you have to do the FAFSA? If you're already going to be working in the fishing industry, why should you have to do the FAFSA? And then would you not walk a graduation because you are an immigrant family and you were unable to do it and the school didn't have the resources to help you do it, although you could make an appointment with ACPE apparently. So we were looking more for the carrot than the stick on this.
Oh. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair. So my thinking about it is that if we were to do something like this, that there would have to be teacher involvement. There'd have to be like almost like today the class is filling out their FAFSA. And, you know, and like the teacher's walking it through and everyone's having to do it. And I'm wondering if in the same way that with certain things we opt out, that there could be the option of opting your kid out of doing this. But I mean, to go to Vice Chair Allard's concern about foster kids, it's my understanding that there are resources to help foster kids fill out the FAFSA and that they qualify big time for federal aid because they're foster kids. So I would hate for them actually to miss out on the opportunity to qualify for those sort of extra funds as foster kids because for some reason they weren't motivated to fill this out. So I'm really brainstorming ways because for the record, I don't know if I should say it for the record, I had the same problem with the whole gambling in the title. I mean, there were lots of us that didn't want that in the title. So finding ways to achieve the goal without some of the hurdles, I think is kind of where I'm coming from.
Through the chair, I think Director Eford was going to say a couple more things about that, perhaps about the foster kids. And then I would like to just add the goal with this is to increase the completion rate. And so if there's a better way to do it, I'm all in. And there was one other thing I wanted to add, and I can't think of it. So I'll let Director Eford add a couple things.
Through the chair, Representative Gray, one thing I wanted to point out, each of the states, there are actually 12 states now that have mandate or required FAFSA completion for graduation. However, every one of them have opt-outs, ways that students and families can make that. Again, it is a personal decision for them to decide whether they're going to fill it out or not. And so there are many ways to waive that requirement for students with a parent's involvement in that. And specifically for foster children, as I was saying, I think with this new provisional status, that with the definitions around, I think a number of foster students would be able to do this independently, and there are other opportunities. And that is really why we do have, and we're putting resources in to try and provide services, training our teachers, training counselors, training community members, to support those students that may not have that support at home.
And if I might, Madam Chair, I was going to make a comment about the Excel Academy just presented in House Education. And one of the things that they're doing, they're a bridge organization. And so kids who are growing up in rural or remote Alaska and don't know how to catch a bus in Anchorage and that kind of thing. So this program does... They bring kids into Anchorage. They help them learn those sort of city skills. They also do career and technical education with them. And one of the things they do is FAFSA completion as part of their program, I think for the seniors, juniors or seniors.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute. We had public testimony set for this, but I don't see anyone on, but I want to make sure that we honor the commitment to that. So I will now open up public testimony for House Bill 163. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, I'm not seeing anyone online. So for those watching who did not have an opportunity to testify, you can email your written testimony to house.judiciary@akleg.gov, and it will be uploaded to the public record. So I will now close public testimony in House Bill 163. But I see we have Representative Carpenter and Representative Johnson have some more questions. Representative Carpenter.
So thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, I just wanted to draw a comparison to something that was said earlier about the PFD education raffle. And that is actually, we established that a couple years ago as a split the pot raffle, I believe. And so that is eligible applicants for a PFD directing a portion of their PFD go into the pot, and then it is split to the lucky winners at the end of the cycle. And so not exactly a direct comparison to what we're establishing here, because the buy-in in this case with the education raffle is the portion of their PFD that they put towards that program. And Representative Johnson was speaking about gambling at a casino and using some analogy there. The thing that I see we set up here is the obligation to pay. So a casino says, come in and participate in this game, and here's the rules of the game. And if you, while the rules might be stacked against you, the house is going to win more often than not, if you do end up winning, then there is an obligation to pay. And the casino can't at some point in time say, hey, we're out of money and I can't pay. And you know, we would have the same thing if you've got a community center that has a raffle for a particular a plane ticket to raise funds, and then at the end of the raffle period says, well, we don't have enough money to buy the plane ticket, so sorry, we're not going to do it. There's going to be some legal problems there that I would think that the state would be obligating or pick up that liability if we said, we're going to participate in a raffle by statute, and then there's no money in that fund because of legislative decision. Probably the words subject to appropriation going into the program so that people understand when they're participating in the raffle that it is subject to appropriation is going to get us out of this legal question mark. But that still is going to sit poorly with people who are participating in the raffle in the first place. And do we really want to get ourselves into that quagmire of, you know, it's technically legal that we didn't appropriate money to the fund, but people, there's an expectation that they were going to get something when they participated. So
yeah, I would just
concerned about that.
Representative Hemshute.
Through the chair, yeah, I would like to just comment on that. The thing would only work anyway if it was reliable, if you didn't know which year the money was there and which year it's not. So it's really only going to be a successful incentive if it's funded and people aren't on the uncertain ground of, well, I don't know if it's actually going to pay out this year or not. It would need to be, there would need to be some certainty to it.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I may be dating myself a little bit, but before I was able to get into college, I had to take an SAT test. And I still think you take that, use it for college acceptance. Well, to me, that is kind of the ultimate decision whether or not you're going to pursue a higher education. So why not make the FAFSA application a prerequisite to the SAT test?
Madam Chair, I'd like to respond on the discussions about education.
I would like us to have further conversations about solutions to this with Representative Hemshute, Before we get into a further debate about education, this committee is to consider the bill as proposed. And while there are many dynamic things that could be debated here, I would like to keep us on finding what we can do to help the success of our students. And sounds like there's obviously a little bit of work that needs to be done on assuring that this would be funded as desired, because I agree with Representative Imshu, it will not work if there's uncertainty. But I think that there could be ways to be able to close these gaps and also not come in conflict with the dedication of funds. So I'm going to set House Bill 163 aside and allow us time to be able to work through some of these things with the sponsor. So that concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Wednesday, April 24th at 1 p.m. to hear House Bill 324, Insurance Data Security, by Representative Stapp in its first hearing, and hear H.J.R. 28, Constitutional Amendment Education Funding, sponsored by the House Judiciary Committee in its first hearing. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect it is 2:37 p.m.